everyone, and welcome back to RPG R&D. I am one of your hosts, Jess Geyer. I am one half of Wannabe Games, and I make tabletop role-playing games. And I am here, as always, with my co-host, Craig Campbell. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Jess. Welcome back, right?
Yeah.
We had a little bit of a break. I'm Craig Campbell. I own Nerdburger Games, and I also make role-playing games. And we are here with a returning guest of ours, a friend of ours, friend of the show, friend of ours, friend to all of you, Evan. Welcome back.
Thank you, Craig. I love being here.
Yay. Evan, tell the fine folks at home who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm Evan Torner. I co-founded a journal called Analog Game Studies and a contest called the Golden Cobra Challenge. And then I make tabletop and live action role-playing games and like to talk about them.
I was just at a LARP yesterday and had my entire face painted white. I was a banshee of the winter court of the Fae. And I still have some of the makeup on my eyelashes. I look a little strange. It looks like I don't have all of my eyelashes, it looks like in this video. I love LARPs. Anyway, we're not talking about LARPs.
No. We're talking today about scheduling, I thought.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, scheduling is really difficult. It's difficult for a podcast host. It's difficult for a LARPer. It's difficult for a tabletop GM.
It's difficult everything. For a human being.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
It can be a real pain.
I didn't know that the biggest obstacle in my life as an adult would be scheduling people. Here I am in my life.
I was sure it was going to be quicksand.
Right.
Based on how much I saw quicksand stymie people in stories when I was younger and how rarely I saw anybody get upset about not being able to schedule something.
You see, quicksand is a metaphor for scheduling in all movies. Evan, why have you chosen this topic? I know why you've chosen this topic. Why have you chosen this topic?
I chose the topic, I think, because, you know, I had to deal with scheduling, you know, basically from the point where after eighth grade, we didn't have like a reliable Friday afternoon role-playing game club at the rec center, and everyone had like activities and clubs and whatever. And so we had to then figure out how to fit in the campaigns and which campaigns to fit in and which players were available and who are the ones that were liable to sleep in and all these other kinds of things that you don't think about when you're reading the book for a role-playing game and getting excited about it. And so then that was high school. And beyond that, then it just gets more complicated, basically. And when I became a parent, for the first child, I would like occasionally go off and have like the Sunday afternoon game. But I noticed that was like 5 or 6 hours. And like then by the time I would get back to my partner, they would be completely wiped out, like from having watched the kid for 5 or 6 hours. Mm. And I thought, well, this is not nice. You know, I get to go off and have this sort of protected time. They're like full force parenting. How can I be there and be in my role playing session while also, being available in case there's a parenting thing that comes up? And eventually I settled on the 1 hour Discord game tabletop format.
Yeah. And you wrote an article about this.
I did.
Yeah.
So I wrote this article for the annual Knutepunkt journal, which I like because it allows me to kind of get some thoughts off my chest without having too many high stakes. And I recommend everybody all read the annual Knutepunkt books just for general thoughts and research on role-playing games. But this one, I wrote it and shared it with my friend, and he, of course, said, "This is depressing." He's like, you have made me sad that this is what you are reduced to in your role-playing life. And I saw it as the opposite. Through a method of having one-hour Discord games, I get to have a role-playing life at all, rather than being stymied with scheduling. So that's my opener.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's one thing to have your hobby where you're just scheduling a couple hours of your own time within a week or within a month. Then you have to compound that. Like, if I'm playing a social game, I have to also then take into all these other factors. You're just reducing and reducing and reducing the amount of time that's actually available for you to engage in your hobby. It's not like other hobbies. Like, I am a video gamer. I can go play a video game by myself. for however long I want, whenever I want, whenever I'm free. But it's not the same when I want to get a game together for people. No, I see that as a positive too. Like if you can, like any amount of time you get to indulge in your social hobby is a good amount of time.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I think hits and just, you know, we're going to kind of speak around the whole topic as well, some of the things that kind of surround the idea of scheduling. Like even just as a story, I believe, if I remember correctly, it might have been somebody else associated with Pinnacle, but I think it was Shane Hensley who remarked that the Savage Worlds game system, which is sort of the distillation of the original Deadlands system, which was much more robust and complicated. The Savage World system was built, you know, to be fast, furious, and fun. That's the tagline for the system. And it was, you know, very much on the designers' minds, on Hensley's minds, and the other people involved, that it should be something that can produce a satisfying game experience in just 2 or 3 hours, because the change that had taken place in all of their lives between when they developed Deadlands and when they were doing these other systems later was like, yeah, like, got older, got other responsibilities, including family, children, you know, things that you need to do to help support your partner, and you know, they changed, like, you know, game systems came out of the need for being able to schedule more easily, and I'm sure there are plenty of people who have designed game systems or who have house ruled things in their own game systems in order to streamline certain things so that it becomes a little easier to have a shorter game session, therefore making scheduling easier to do. And so there's a lot of things that can be done to accommodate the change that we all face as we get older and run into scheduling situations. Don't get me wrong, I'm sort of, you know, part of the reason I'm looking forward to someday retiring is like, well, I can go and have those 6 hour Saturday afternoon games again if I want to. which, you know, I could get away with now being unmarried without children, but at the same time, I'm also a game designer. So if, like, if I start playing way too much, I'm just not actually getting anything done for the company. But you know, there's a lot to talk about as far as all of this stuff, to make scheduling easier. And certainly Evan's commentary about, like, you know, embracing the idea that, well, I get no gaming or I get a very focused 1 hour game where everybody's on the same page and everybody knows how this is gonna work. And
Yeah.
that's how you get your fix, as it were, because we are all a little addicted, aren't we?
Well, I mean, but it's good to, you know, to feed your addiction, especially if it's such a creative hobby you know, tabletop RPGs. Because again, like Jess, I can just pick up a video game, but video games feel like Doritos, and tabletop RPGs feel like a meal. And you know that I eat both. I eat both Doritos and the meal. That don't get me wrong. But then the meal, which is, you know, I get to enjoy my friend's company and tell a story together. That's wonderful. But again, Craig mentioned, of course, Shane Le Hensley's design, and so there are designs that actually do help you along in the you know, making bite-sized, meaningful content. One of them actually is the original Apocalypse World, which was developed while, you know, Vincent and Meg Baker had small children. And so I remember when we went over to their house for their campaign, like it would be bedtime actually for the kids. So Vincent would go put the kids to bed upstairs and we kind of socialize out downtown. Sorry, I said downtown, downstairs. We'd socialize downstairs. We had maybe an hour sometimes because kids don't like go to bed when you just want them to. It's just the way it is. So we would maybe socialize between 8 and 9 p.m. And then by the time we like finally started was like 9:30 p.m. I'm not complaining. This is just the rhythm of the thing. And then I think we maybe got until 11 or 11:30. So if you actually said, "Well, how long was your session?" It was like 2 hours or the maximum. But what you did was you got a couple of very concrete moves, which is of course how the game is designed. You hit a move, and then sometimes you have move snowballs. So one move will then kind of, you know, cascade into another move, which will cascade into another move, and then you'll feel like a lot has happened when maybe 20 minutes have elapsed. And so, you know, I was thinking about that design the other day, that's now percolated into what we now call Powered by the Apocalypse, and how, you know, it really is about, well, we have only 2 hours together. We really need to condense a lot of this content and something meaningful and interesting into this space.
Okay, so the question that was the first question in your blog, like, okay, how can you actually run a full session of TTRPG in an hour? And does that actually take scheduling of its own within that hour?
Yeah, so you got to pace yourself, but also, you know, like first of all, you first have to decide to socialize your friends for it, because they of course are all used to 2 to 4 hour sessions at, you know, and so then you have to be like, what about an hour? No one has 2 hours, everyone has 1 hour. And then, you know, you use that as a sort of lubricant into, okay, what is the actual shape of the session going to be like? You'll need a rules light system to run it, but even rules heavy systems can work well if you have like a proper character keeper or something digital that lets you manage things. So I will say, I ran Cyberpunk Red in this format. I've run Swords of the Serpentine in this format, and Against the Titan, a variety of different games that have like different things where you are checking boxes or activating different parts of like your Excel file. You can even run a combat in an hour, but you just have to be really clear about what's going to happen and how that will be done. And often the combat subsystem will trip you up and not help you. What you want is a system that does help you and says, you know, how do we get to a certain waypoint where things are interesting, rather than bog people down in sort of numbers and decisions, especially meaningless decisions like, I shoot at him, roll, you miss. Okay. Right. You know, if there's a like that, I made no meaningful decision. There was no meaningful outcome. So there's a number of ways in which RPGs don't facilitate meaningful conversation, and you have to actively push against that natural default to make sure that something does happen. And then you have 4 or 5 scenes, and then you call it.
Yeah, I mean, like for me, I'm like so hungry for like the actual storytelling and dialogue and in-character interactions that if I'm in a combat for like even if I do have a 4 hour session, I'm in a combat for a half hour. I'm like, what is the point? Like, what are we doing here? Can we get to the stuff that matters? I'm in a role-playing game, not a shoot 'em up fighting game. And like so that kind of stuff appeals to me. Sometimes you do play a 4 hour session where you only do get like an hour of actually good chunk, like, ooh, we're playing this game, like we are role playing. This is fun. I mean, sometimes combat can be fun, I guess. But not for an hour, not for me. Not for me at least.
But scheduling is such a beast, right? Even for an hour format, you know, there have been times where we had 2 or 3 months between sessions just to find that 1 hour that even just 5 of us could share. That time becomes so precious because of that gap and that rarity, that you then kind of default actually to playing the game rather than having the conversation that you all have. Because often, like I said, Discord, you could just chat about stuff like in the chat on Discord. Yeah, like you could put on other channels, you know, your personal life or things that are on your mind, or you know, your memes. But then when you have your hour together, you really sit there and say, let's advance these characters' lives somehow. And that intentionality has been very helpful for me, because I do like the BSing, but the BSing can't be the whole session, and the BSing is also something I can't quite afford in the same way, you know, because like, let's say we BS for 30 minutes, now we don't have 30 minutes remaining, and how are we going to get into it, and what are we doing? And I've still run those sessions. I've run 25 minute sessions before. And again, this has to do with convention GMing, right? So what you do is you frame an extremely strong social situation, right? You know, someone has shown up to a birthday party, for example, and they do not have a present. Everyone else has a present. They're going to stare at you. All right, what's going on? And now the character's on the spot. There's a ticking pressure, and they have to react. And of course, then I need to figure out how is that reaction going to produce something in the plot line or among the characters, no matter what. It doesn't it, like every single response they could have to that scenario is correct. There's no way it can fall flat, or there's very few ways I will allow it to fall flat. And at that point, then it's like every move the characters do anywhere within the fiction will create enough friction or enough energy for me to pull out the next bit and so forth.
So when you're scheduling these 1 hour game sessions, it sounds like from what you said and what I've read in this blog post, these are not we play at this time like on this week, and that is the schedule.
We
It sounds like you're
try.
negotiating.
Yeah, we try, but everyone's got just such busy lives. So let's say you're in Jewish high holidays, like that's several months in the fall, and then, none of those times work out all of a sudden. So yeah, we do pick a day at the in the week, but that's just the start of the conversation.
I'm kind of going back to you with what you're saying about like the time at the table being golden and being dedicated to like the gameplay and what you've decided to do. I think that's a norm that everyone should be instilling on their table. Like if we're here together, like our time is really precious, especially as you do get older and have more responsibilities. Like that time is really precious. Let's spend it doing the thing that we said we're here for. That's a really good norm to have, even if you're not running a 1 hour session and you have like 6 hours free time every week to play. Like, use that time. Like, that is so golden and precious. Like, you're not gonna have that for forever.
Right.
I mean, for me, I prefer like we're playing regularly at this time. Like, this is when we have dedicated to this time. It just makes scheduling easier for me. And it makes it feel like, okay, we're making this game a priority. We're making this campaign a priority in your life, something that has to be scheduled around, not something that you're scheduling into your already chaotic and busy schedule. Like, this is a thing that you have in your schedule. It is a block freed up. But I also have the benefit of not having children either, and I don't need to worry about a kid getting sick or having school play or anything like that. My schedule is pretty free.
You also, though, you have to a little bit Bruce Lee style be like water, right? So, even though you say we're intentionally going to gather and have this hour, you also have to have grace when everybody when someone does have the school play or someone's like, oh, I have to back out or something. And that's, of course, standard kind of teacher fare. Once is okay. Once it becomes a pattern, then you begin to say, I've noticed that this has become a pattern. But you never want this to become a punitive session where it's like you have to do this, and gosh, we're going to drag you across the finish line. That is a general lesson, right? Which is like people should not be playing your game to prevent themselves from feeling bad. I know that it shouldn't be said, but there is this kind of punitive idea sometimes among some game masters, and I want to say we should resist that and say, we welcome that we get to have a session. It's so precious together. We enjoy it together. And if this game is not enjoyable for you, or you feel like we're punishing you for not being able to make it, that is an issue, and we need to resolve it right now.
That's a really good point. Hopefully we're playing this game because we all enjoy it and not because you think the GM is going to be mad at you.
Yeah, the 1 hour session is not a tax to ensure that you remain friends.
Ouch, Craig. Ouch. That is so on point.
But that speaks to a lot of things that might come out of that too. You made the comment, Evan, the getting the five of you together. So five is a healthy number of people. I'm assuming that means you included. That's five people. So like a GM and four players. One of the things to keep in mind if the schedule situation starts to become tight for those folks out there who have like, oh, well, we've, you know, for years and years, we've had a GM and six players, or like six or seven or eight players, and we rotate people in. And sometimes there's, oh, there's always like one or two missing, when we have it works out. The game that we're running and how we structure everything allows people to miss games and blah, blah, blah. That, you know, there's the potential of looking at, you know, restructuring how you're going to play too, where it might be maybe that big group splits into two smaller groups and somebody else steps up to GM, or you play some sort of like part of the group plays a GMless game. And you can also then rotate around. Like, we'll do this, like for a few sessions, we'll do this thing. We'll tell like a whole little story arc in these two groups, and then we'll let the characters intermingle and kind of join. So that way all the players get chance, get quality time with all of their friends, just in bits and pieces as they kind of rotate people around. There's a lot of things that can be done, and that, and we're using the 1 hour game as an example, but that can be a 2 hour or 3 hour game if you're used to, you know, a 5 or 6 hour game. Like that, you can scale it. Like I've had plenty of games that for a long time in college, like during my grad school years, we had a game that was basically. And even for a few years after that, our game was noon until it would wrap between 5 and 6 on Saturday. And then we would spend the evening together. Like we would watch a movie and we'd get pizza and we'd like, so it was like an 8 hour thing. So even within the confines of the game, if the game was 5 hours, there's plenty of game sessions I've had where we really only had about 2 hours of real moving the game forward. It was a lot of Monty Python jokes and a lot of people talking about the most recent this or that movie. And some, a couple of people getting into a very heated debate about Marvel Comics or whatever. And you know, that sort of thing happens. So it's structuring, it can require restructuring the dynamic in a bunch of different ways in order to keep the game thing, the game portion of it happening while still accommodating all of the other pieces, like how often you get to interact with a group of friends. And how long you spend, like Evan was talking about, his article talks speaks to this as well, like keeping the, when you really got a short session like that, keep the jokey stuff into like have a channel that's dedicated for that, and you can kind of, you know, goof and joke and have those debates about Marvel Comics in dribs and drabs over the course of the week, so that when you get the game going, it's like, okay, now we're going to shift into game mode, and that's what we're going to do here, because we've made the effort to take some of those other things that we consider part of our social dynamic, and we put them in a different capsule that everybody has access to. We're just not going to do that capsule at the game time.
I do have another college anecdote, which is scheduling. We were able to find only one time that the group could meet. Again, it was me and I think it, I even think it was three other players. It wasn't even four, it was three other players. And between the four of us, the only time that was available was Sundays, 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. So it was a substitute for church.
Wow.
It was a horror game. We were playing Unknown Armies.
Nice.
And
Church.
but there was a ritual to it, and the ritual was we would all go to breakfast together. And if I didn't see you at breakfast, then that was already like a bad sign for the session. You know, it was like the clouds are on the horizon, or the, you know, the stars aren't right. Maybe we aren't playing today. But you know, if I saw everyone at breakfast like conscious, then I thought, okay, we will get Unknown Armies in today. And so the but it was also like really hardcore to be like, it's like 9 a.m. on a Sunday, and we're now going to describe this like creepy shack where, you know, untold horrors have happened. And I mean, but the only, you know, it was because everyone really, really wanted to play together, and we really didn't have any schedule overlap except for this time. And so we built it into a whole thing and said, we're not gonna do this forever. We're gonna do this for like a semester, maybe 2 semesters, and that's it. But we, at least we get it. And I think I so I think I've been dealing with this problem, yeah, for my entire gaming career.
Yeah.
And it means I'm surrounded by interesting people. That's what it means to me. People live in lead interesting lives.
That's always like that's the double-edged blade of having an interesting life, is that now you have all these interesting people and all these interesting things in your life, and you want to enjoy all of them, but you can't enjoy all of them all the time because it's too much. You only have 24 hours a day if you don't have special magical powers. And that it's really tough. It's really, really tough. I love what you said about the ritual of it because I don't know. I think people crave ritual. I think they really like ritual. It makes people come back. It makes people feel like they belong. There's all sorts of benefits to that. My favorite game that I was ever in, we would play for like 6 hours every Saturday. And every Saturday, we had six people show up to play this game. I would travel to go play this game. And it was very much ritualized. We would start, we would all show up a little bit early so we could chat and get all of our chats away. We'd sit down, the GM would play a little music that like the theme song of our game. We would all settle in. We would break about halfway through. We'd chat for about 15 minutes over drinks, come back in, and wrap. Like that was like we would do that every single day, every single week, and I kept going back because of the ritual of it and because it was a great game. The thing that really worked about this is something else that you said too is and is in your post. Short scenes that are cut abruptly are magnitudes better than ones that drag on in the hopes of more drama. Like when you're playing, it's kind of like I watch a lot of anime, right? I would rather watch a short anime, six episodes where something happens in every single episode and like the story ramps up so much than a 500 episode long thing where like every episode, like, oh my God, please, please, let's get to the action. Please, please, please. That starts feeling like a chore. It also means your campaign's going to last longer. And the longer your campaign lasts, the more likely it is that somebody's schedule is going to change and they will have to leave before their story is finished. And that's not satisfying. I would have, like, I want, like, really, really big, juicy drama every single session. I want my character to be in the spotlight at least a little bit, just a little bit once, and then a little bit of more drama within the rest. And that's gonna really fill up my belly. I'm gonna, that's what I want. So I think that that line in your blog post, like that really, really rings true for me.
I thank you for that, and I think also you can do it at a campaign level where you are ending, you're arcing towards the ending even shorter than you think so, because if your players really want the campaign to keep going, they will arc away from the ending.
Yeah.
And so then that, and now you're in a negotiating thing. Well, I'm threatening the ending, but actually you don't want it to end. Neither do I, really. And so now we're waffling away, and but we do know it will end, and that then we will have at least some sort of satisfying conclusion for the characters, but not until the players all agree that this is going to be okay.
So how do you start arcing your players toward an ending when they're resisting you?
Have a frank discussion and basically say, like, I think this is where we're heading. Isn't that right? And then someone can push back and say, nope. But to not come in with like this, like, I'm an artistic visionary, sort of ethos, but rather one of, this is a shared thing. I do have some material prepared. If I didn't have material prepared, then you would probably think less of the game. And so, obviously that prepared material does have a kind of direction to it. But when we discuss, so we're not going to discuss every facet of the game in detail. But again, I did a 25 session Prism campaign with this. Prism is Gay Mermaids. It was 3 years of Gay Mermaids. We had at least one kid over the course of the Gay Mermaids arc, and some more material. And we kept going, and in part because after I think session two or session three, it was quite clear that the arc of the campaign was headed towards this climactic opera performance, that eventually all the characters would be somehow involved with that. And that was clear 3 years ago, right? That we were headed there. Of course there was the different MacGuffins and other things in the middle, but it was always like knowing that once this opera is performed, we will then, end the campaign. And the funny thing is, the opera was never performed. We actually ended it in a way which, it made that performance impossible, but everyone was okay with that. And what was nice was, it was not me deciding that. I had decided that here we're arcing towards this opera performance, but the players had said, I'm going to make this and this and this decision, which will sabotage that, but I think that's what my character would do. And the group is going along with that. And since the group was on board and the characters were on board, I organically went along with them and said, yes, this makes sense. Now we can actually do a few different outcomes that are even more interesting. And it also meant it was nice for me, because then I could still be surprised by the ending and delighted by it.
So how would this work? I'm curious, how would it work if it wasn't a GM'd game? Do you think a 1 hour session where where you have pretty clear pacing, you have some story beats you're hitting, where would that work when everybody kind of has the same role in the negotiations of creating a story?
It works for something really highly structured like Fiasco. So if I have a preloaded sort of Fiasco scenario where we say, you're going to be this, you're going to be this, you're going to be this, let's go. We can do it pretty well, but it has to be extremely well structured. And the moment you kind of let a, like the danger is then when someone is deliberating too much on a scene or dragging it out or something like that. And again, we don't want to apply pressure where the game is painful to play, but you do want to kind of put a little bit of like improv, lightning round on the spotlight kind of a pressure where you say, what will your character do? And any answer is correct, but then that then the group can apply that pressure and not necessarily a game master. But I do think that for like a belonging outside the belonging game, it's very it's pretty tough. I would say the 1 hour format. This is one of the things where I say, your game design does matter in this circumstance, because there needs to be a idea of how many mechanics will be between me and the results of any outcome. And oftentimes with a GM-less game, which is negotiating authority, like you have this whole like, oh, okay, now I'm giving the crown over to this person, and they're going to frame the things. And that to me just takes a really strong social group dynamic to do it, especially in Discord. The powerful thing about Discord is, or even Zoom, is everyone has to take their turn to say the thing, but in order for everyone to not talk over each other, you do have to adopt a certain group dynamic, and that could power a GM-less game, but I haven't seen a lot of that work well for me.
Yeah, unless it's like specifically designed for Discord, like that is really tough. That's why kind of why I asked that. Like, I don't think that this, not every kind of game is going to work for every kind of schedule. Not every kind of game is going to work for every kind of medium that you're playing in. It's just not going to. But I can see now, like I can like, I mean, having read the blog post, I see why it was posted on the Nordic LARP website. As someone who's played that, like. I mean, those are games where you are sort of like you have to pace it. You have to pace it correctly. You have to be re relinquishing your secrets correctly. You have to think about what scenes you want to have, which ones you care about not giving away. And I think that those can be really, really enriching experiences, and they can be really replayable experiences. Like you could play with all the same sorts of characters multiple times and have a completely different story, even though all of the secrets in the backgrounds were all the same from the beginning.
That to me is one thing that's really fascinating about these like low transparency LARPs that people still want to play over again. Like I got to play Shadows in Time in Sweden in May, and that is like that is the Finnish dark LARP by Laura Kruger, who did the Odysseus spaceship game, and she has this basically what she calls a briefcase LARP, and you can book her to run it for you if you want. And so we're gonna try and bring a run to Toronto actually. The premise is, of course, you're all tra time travelers, and you're like 16,000 years old, and you have like 80 pages of character sheet. And there are lots of people who like to replay that game. Why? Even though all the secrets are known by the time you played through it once, you still want to see how it happens. You want to see how certain things come out and how little decisions, particularly in acts one and two, then really lead to that change in action in act three. And it's the same as like playing, you know, Deathloop or Hades or some of these other sort of time loop games where in the video game sphere, where you do actually want to see something different. I know people also replay Disco Elysium in the same spirit. They're gonna re-see about the same 75% of the dialogue, but it's that other 25% that they are really interested in when they made a few different decisions.
Baldur's Gate 3, like, you know.
I wonder if the mentality to replay a game like that goes at least a little bit hand in hand with the world of spoilers that we live in now, where it's entirely possible to learn really key spoiler information through no fault of your own. But you still want to watch the show or the movie or the series or whatever because you want to see how we get to that. Like I want to see like if you know the twist ending and you learn like the romance, how the romance plays, you know, the romantic couple, how they end up, and you, just accidentally because you didn't get around to, you know, watching the limited series or the movie or whatever, but you still go in. I do that all the time. Like I've come to grips with the fact that because I spend a certain amount of time online, there are going to be times when I learn things about movies that are going to quote unquote spoil the ending. And I have decided I'm not going to be a bitchy little whiny baby about it and be like, okay, well now I know that thing, but I'm still curious how the story gets to that. Like what, you know, how does the writer get us there? What are the, you know, the performances that are going to still kind of wow me, that I'm going to really enjoy, like how somebody played a character or how they implement the twist, even if I know the twist is there, or the big reveal, or the, you know, the who wins the battle. Like you can know all that stuff and still enjoy the journey.
And you can enjoy it even more when those decisions aren't necessarily written in stone. I think then, like, if you, I think, like, a really good type of game that would work for a 1 hour Discord role playing game campaign, you could even keep it very limited, would be one where, like, characters are preset or predetermined in a way. So the GM, I think. Having a GM is really good for this type of style. The GM has less to predict based off of, like, okay, you've made up this character and you have this own character in your head and you have your own decisions about what how they fit in the story. Like, okay, no, this is how they're fitting into the story. I can kind of make better decisions and pace this more easily. I've always also found it more easy to pace myself as a player when. When I've read like a blue sheet or something, and I can kind of figure out what I'm doing, like what does the story need? What is the story asking for me to do? And I still find that incredibly satisfying. It doesn't feel like being railroaded to me in a way that I would have felt railroaded if it were my own character and I was promised, like, oh no, there's no tracks here. And then I brush the dust off a little bit and I see a bunch of tracks.
Yeah, I think one thing is when you get a little bit more advanced in your I don't want to say age, but at least in your experience with the with role playing, but also with other stories, you kind of know how things go and you know what chunks you can remove and still keep it interesting. It's it's one of those things where I also see this with a lot of game designers who are like students of mine or others that you know they'll start off with their maximalist game, like their teenage game that was close to their heart, and it's gonna be a giant failure because they don't know all the subsystems and how it happens. And eventually, like 5, 10 years later down their career, there's suddenly a minimalist, cutesy, cozy game that still has this dark, sinister undertone comes out from them, and you're like, oh, okay. So it's like at the beginning of your career, you try to design, you know, an Elden Ring thing, and it's actually later that you get the small town horror or the you know like quiet whatever, and it's not just because you know the rhythms of the person's life change, but that they realize, oh, I can make this really effective, and I know how to do it because I can remove this, and this, and I don't need to have all these other mechanics, graphics, and bells and whistles to make it work.
I mean, it does come with experience too. It comes with your experience of knowing how stories go, for sure. And also maybe a little bit of maturity and not trying to be the main character every single time for every single scene.
Yeah.
I think that like teenagers fall into that problem a lot. And so do young people, but so do like new players who are playing for the first time and have maybe some pre-assumptions.
I think
That's a hard habit to break.
it may link into the process that we all go through too, is that when we're younger, we're figuring out who we are. So we're trying a lot of different things. We're dipping our toes into absolutely everything. And then as you get older, you kind of discover, well, these are the things that really are more me. And so that starts to manifest it in creative endeavors as well. And whether it's designing a game and kind of distilling down to the bare minimums, or whether it's like the types of characters you play or the types of games that you come to like, because you realize like, oh, these are the ones that kind of work better for me, because they've got the things that I went, I had fun, I did A, B, and C, but what I really want now is X, Y, and Z.
Right. Well, there's another a LARP lesson here. I don't mean to make this all about LARP, but Alessandro Giovannucci from Chaos League, who just ran Miskatonic University in the US, you know, he tells the players at the beginning of that run, he says, the best scene you're in is the scene you're in right now, right? The best scene is the scene you're in right now. And why does that matter? Because when you're young and you're in these like large, confusing blockbuster LARP situations. But the joke I always say is, oh, look, there's a Minotaur, and there went your plot. You know, you that, that Minotaur has now just stampeded your plot out of existence, and you know, basically trivial or non-functional plots are devoured by these other like larger devices, or the big werewolf cult or something like that. It eats your game alive. And when you get older, you're like, no, I am me and you are you, and the two of us are happening, and there goes a Minotaur, but that's a normal thing for this kind of game. We're gonna stay here and make sure our characters still have their moment for themselves, and then we'll continue on. So you kind of learn to adjust to your life as an NPC, knowing that you aren't. You're a full dignified human being, but you don't need to be part of the apocalyptic plot that's happening over there to, you know, to have that existence. And also, you know, in a shorter game, as long as people see you as your character and you are seen, you feel seen, you're a part of it, you don't have to have everything happen or the full range of agency that you know, you might want.
And you don't need to have to kind of bring it around to what we've been talking about overall, is like you don't need to have the game experience that you had when your life was freer, and had you had all that time, and so did all your friends and your gamer buddies, and to have a satisfying RPG playing life. You can do it in other ways. You can distill the pieces into, you know, what will make a satisfying experience for you, where you can't necessarily play a 6 hour game on a Saturday every single week, but you can, you know, play six games in a month, in 6 months, that are really, you know, just an hour or two long, and that are really satisfying. And you know, as we continue to say, scratch that itch and, you know, feed the monkey on your back, or whatever addiction metaphor you want to use.
Yeah, I think a lot too, like those really big, like your really long campaigns, you're playing every week with all of your friends. Was the story really that good? Was your teenage high school GM like actually super, super amazing? Or were you just a teenager having a lot of fun with your buddies and making good memories? I mean, we look through like the rose-colored glasses of nostalgia. like all of the really long LARPs that I used to play at camps where, I mean, I'd be there for the full weekend and not a lot would actually happen, but I didn't like those because of how cool and good the game was, because they really weren't. I had a lot of fun because I was hanging out with my friends and being goofy, and I could accomplish that but much more in a couple hours of a LARP. And if I want something really, really long and really, really cool, I can always go to a convention.
And for example, run a 6 hour Dune
Oh, right. Like, I could run a
LARP.
6 hour Dune LARP that I poured
Like
many, many
just
hours
actually
through.
did.
Yeah.
I mean, I have nothing but admiration for that. I'll just say that, you know, to do a 6 hour Dune LARP is heavy metal.
Well, it wasn't 6 hours of totally in character. We had a lot of workshops at the beginning. And then there was downtime in between the days. So even then, you're not actually in character for 6 full hours, even though you had that 6 hour slot. So you want to use that, like, same thing, like pacing and all of that really, really matters.
Scheduling your time and your effort in
Yeah.
order to optimize each part of what you
Yeah.
want to get.
Yeah, and then letting your experience kind of say, well, that didn't work. And then your next time you do it a
Right.
lot better. I mean, I was like, when I'm in my 40s, I can schedule things really well, but it took like 20 years of me not scheduling things particularly well to finally get it and say, well, actually the opener for the scene just needs to be 2 sentences long. If they want a little more description, I can do that. But otherwise, I'm really interested in this thing that this character might do. And first, I'm going to see if they do it. And if they don't do it, then I've got this other thing. And all of a sudden, you've got like a very complicated structure distilled to absolute clear guidelines for yourself and for your players. And your players appreciate it because then they feel that moment of, oh, my decision matters, my character matters. Who am I? Thanks to this moment.
Here's the other benefit too. If you are a person who has a bunch of free time, but everybody else in your life doesn't, they can only schedule 1 hour. You can schedule a whole bunch of 1 hour cool different sessions and play a bunch of different games and get all that. And that's kind of what I want. I want a smorgasbord.
So Bill White, my longtime academic collaborator, he has hour-long lunch sessions. He does a West Marches style session, if I recall correctly, where there's a rotating group of random undergraduates at Penn State Altoona, and if you show up at the lunch table, he's going to run that hour session for you, and you're going to have a wild time with your characters in a very, probably in one scene, to be honest. But that, people come back for that. So that, like you said, the scheduling is not about like, how can I contort myself to this old wargaming or other convention format. It's how can you relate to your players' free time and your own free time, through this game.
Evan, this was a fascinating conversation. I'm going to try it out for sure. Try out the 1 hour LARP or 1 hour RPG. My LARP headed right now. I'm going to try it out. I'm going to see how it goes because I want to play more games in my life. And yeah, so thank you. Thank you so much for having this chat with us.
Like I said, it was a pleasure to talk about this specific thing. I saw this as a topic on the list, and I thought I can't ignore this.
Where can people find you and your stuff?
I'm mostly on Blue Sky these days, having meaningless debates. So you can find me. I am Guy in the Black Hat at Blue Sky, or is it Guy in Black? No, yeah, it's Guy in the Black Hat dot blue B Sky dot social. And then also, of course, Analog Game Studies and the Golden Cobra Conference has at goldencobra.org, which has the hour-long committee LARPs, among other forms, that will be starting up in a few weeks.
Awesome. You can find me on Blue Sky too. I'm at Joska, and then whatever comes after that, the normal default one. Yeah, I don't have it. I'm going to a LARP convention in a couple weeks, so I'm very excited about that. That's all.
And I'm Nerdburger Craig on Blue Sky and Instagram, and the website is nerdburgergames.com. Games are on DriveThruRPG. You can find all of Jess's games on itch.io.
Oh yeah, you can do that. You can.
And Cosmic Corsairs goes to Kickstarter on October 7th. That's a Tuesday. So looking forward to playing magical space pirates. Beating up on authoritarians. So yeah, that's the whole deal. Thanks again for Evan for coming. I always find talking to you to be incredibly informative. You've got this scholarly kind of
Super.
a background that you bring to everything. And we do appreciate having you on the show.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steph Sax, for our opening and closing theme song, which is called Avil. Thank you, Steph Sax. It's licensed under Creative Commons. And thank all of you for listening. And we'll see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye.